Welcome to our service. And we welcome those listening to us through our recordings page on our website. We also welcome all those who are joining us via our webcam. And a special hello to Robin, who's watching in. My name is Gavin Byrne. I'm a member of this congregation, and I'm also a ministry student with the Unitarian College. And our opening words are from Cathal Courtney. The starting point of beloved community is not to be found in theology, in person, or even in a God. It is to be found wherever you are, whatever you are, and whenever you are. Its starting point is in our experience of being human, cast upon the earth together at this particular moment in time, with a fundamental need to find the hope that might sustain our lives. Today we celebrate our community as we welcome new members. We give thanks for all of the gifts we have received from each other. We seek to strengthen the bonds that bind us together, and we warmly welcome all those who seek a community where they can explore their belief and unbelief in freedom and in love. So by our presence here with one another, we acknowledge that sacred thread that unites us all. We now light our chalice, symbol of our free Unitarian faith, sign of the spark of life in all human beings, fire of commitment to love and justice. As the chalice cup embraces the flame, may we hold one another in loving community, sharing our gratitude, our pain, and our hopes for the world. For we are co-weavers of the story of the universe, a web of intimate connections and infinite possibilities. So let us sing now hymn number 38, Morning Has Broken. This is our membership service, welcoming new and old friends into this fellowship of freedom, searching, and love. So let us now together read number 442 from our hymn book, 442. And I will read the regular text, and together we will read what is in italics. We bid you welcome, who come with weary spirit seeking rest, who come with troubles that are too much with you, who come hurt and afraid. We bid you welcome, who come with love in your heart, who come with anticipation in your step, who come proud and joyous. We bid you welcome, who are seekers of a new faith. We come to probe and explore, who come to learn. We bid you welcome, who enter this hall as a homecoming, who have found here room for your spirit, who find in this people a family. Whoever you are, whatever you are, wherever you are on your journey, we bid you welcome. So the choir will now sing a setting of Love is the Doctrine of This Church, arranged by Shari.
Thank you.
Our first reading this morning will be read now by Dennis.
In preparation for this reading, I rang Gavin just to check what the title of his service was, to try and choose a reading that might be appropriate. And he let me know that the title of today's service is What Do These Unitarians Believe?, which I think is an apt title for the service that we're having today. It so happens that Elaine, my wife, intends to give a service on Saville Hicks, who was minister in this church for 52 years, from 1910 to 1962. And I was rummaging through some of the documents she has at home to see if I could find something appropriate for today. And I came across this amazingly titled sermon by Saville Hicks called The Hobgoblin of Consistency, and I couldn't resist. Now, I've never heard of the word hobgoblin in a spiritual sense apart from John Bunyan's hymn, which we sing. It's in the New Book and the Old Book. I prefer it in the Old Book because it uses the words hobgoblins and foul fiends shall not daunt my spirit. That's hymn number 289 in the Old Book, and it's number 106 in the New Book. If you look up hobgoblin in a search engine, you'll find the usual stuff about mythological small hairy men who get annoyed easily and who can be quite frightening and even dangerous. Does that sound like anybody you know? If you go to the heading literature in the search engine, you'll get this. The term hobgoblin is used sometimes to mean a superficial object that is a source of fear or trouble. The best known example of this use probably comes from the words of Ralph Waldo Emerson. So I thought, well, that's appropriate. And then I started reading the homily, and Saville Hicks talks about consistency and hobgoblins, and he says, all of which brings me to a quotation from the writings of Emerson, from which I borrowed the title of this sermon. And Emerson's description was this: a foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds, adored by little statesmen and philosophers and divines. And he goes on to talk about consistency and beliefs as you go through life and changing your mind and so forth. And in one section headed Spiritual Rebirth, which is apt to today, he says, remember the case of the two Newman brothers, both men of brilliant gifts, children of the same parents, and brought up in the same household as members of the Anglican Church. Yet one ended up as a cardinal in the Catholic Church, now a saint, in the last couple of weeks, and the other, and Cardinal Newman, as you know, founded that beautiful University Catholic Church around the corner, and the other brother ended up a rationalist of a distinctly Unitarian type. So he's basically saying, keep thinking, see what happens. So the piece I want to read after that long introduction is The Christ Consistency, which is the end of his homily. And he says, there is only one kind of consistency that is really worthwhile. You may have and should have consistency of the desire to know, the consistency of the desire to serve, the consistency of a broad tolerance and an understanding love, the consistency of a spiritual outlook which knows the things of time are only the borderline of the things eternal, the consistency of a great ideal, a great love, a great hunger for truth, a great spiritual ambition. That consistency is the Christ consistency, and the virtue of it lies in its ready adjustability to every need, every trouble, doubt or fear, every accompaniment and possibility of life or death, time or eternity. It is unfailingly progressive, for it is the consistency of the soul which finds that it is linked to the life of God, to the evolution of the world, to the destinies of the universe. It fears neither change of opinion, nor change of circumstances, nor the changes of life and death. For it knows that the divine plan is change, eternal, never-ending change, which in turn is but another name for eternal evolution. A static religion in a dynamic, progressive, nuclear world is a tragedy, an anachronism, and a contradiction. But religion, in its truest, deepest sense, lives on. Revelation did not suddenly cease 1900 years ago. It is with us still, as real today as in the past. And when the thunder and the whirlwinds of our human strifes have faded into silence, and the volcanic fury and destruction of revolution and war have spent themselves for a while, the still small voice of eternal revelation continues to speak its message to those who have ears to hear. And the vision splendid shines with a new unveiling of glory to those that have eyes to see. Dare to go on thinking, and never be ashamed or afraid to say in all reverence and in all honesty, I have changed my mind.
Okay, I see some young people in the congregation. Would you like to come up and give me a hand with the story, please? That would be great. Have you ever heard of the hobgoblin? Do you have any idea what a hobgoblin might look like? No? So I have a question for you. Have you ever heard the word diversity in school? You have heard. What do you think it means?
The difference.
Difference, okay. Anything else? Is it big in school?
Yeah.
Do you talk a lot about it? Any other words that describe diversity? Uniqueness, yeah, brilliant. Okay, so my story today is called The Village of Many Ways. So once upon a time, there was a little village called One Way, and it sat in a green valley where the sun loved to linger and the river hummed soft songs to the trees. And people often said, I love this village because everyone here thinks just like me. But one villager, a very kind old woman named Mara, smiled and shook her head. Oh no, she said, that's not quite it. I don't want to live any more with people who think exactly like me. How boring. I want to live with people who love even when they disagree, who care about kindness, fairness, and truth, even if they see the world in different colors. And so, do you know what happened to her? She was asked to leave, and she went on a long journey to find a place where she could settle among people who valued difference and diversity. And after a long search, she found the village of Many Ways. Now, in Many Ways, a little village, there were farmers, there were teachers, there were poets, there were painters, there were dreamers, there were doers. Some prayed to God, and some just whispered to the stars. And some said the mystery of life was enough. But everyone tried to live with good hearts. And when Mara tripped on the cobblestones, her friends hurried to help her. They saw goodness in all her mistakes, and they loved her for both. So the people of Many Ways felt a deep connection to everything, like the river, the trees, the clouds, and most importantly, to each other. They knew their footsteps mattered on the earth. They didn't need to solve every riddle and have an answer to every hard question. It was enough just to walk together and to wander together. Now, sometimes life in the village felt like walking tightrope. But whenever someone wobbled, there was always a hand reaching out to help and steady them. And every Sunday, the villagers gathered in the meeting hall, and there were songs and stories and laughter, but also quiet moments. And together, they promised to try, just try, to be honest, to be kind, and to be brave. And they encouraged each other to live rightly, to care deeply, and to follow the small voice in their heart that said, do good and be kind. And when someone forgot a promise, another gently reminded them, will help you keep it next time. In the village of many ways, people shared what they had, food, ideas, and hugs, and hope. And sometimes they argued, sometimes they stumbled, but always they began again. So Mara would look around at the meeting hall, her eyes shining. "This," she said softly, "this is what I wanted, to be with people who share their hearts and their minds, who see life as an adventure, warm and wild and full of love." And everyone would smile because they knew she was right. In short, Mara wanted to be with people just like them, the people of the village of many ways. Thank you very much for coming up. Now let us sing together hymn number 343, A Fire Mist and a Planet. I now invite Denise, Chair of our Managing Committee, and the Reverend Bridget Spain, who will welcome our newest members.
Firstly, I have 8 names on a list, and I'm going to invite those people to come to the front, please. So we have Rekha, Anne Willoughby, Alan Willoughby, Stephen, Larry Rowe, John Moran, and Mark Hutchinson. Now, if they're here, those people are going to sign our book. We welcome everyone to this church. You don't have to be a member to come here Sunday after Sunday. That's to start off. However, we find that some people sort of fall in love with this place and they want to formalize their membership. You know, maybe they've been brought up in a different faith and this means a lot to them that they want to formalize their members. So if you want to do that, the first step is to take one of our application forms. It is signed by the person making the application and an existing member of the congregation proposes them. Those forms go to our managing committee and they agree to accept these new members. Those people are invited then to sign our membership book just on a particular Sunday every year. It's just a celebration of the day. But anyone who isn't here to sign the book, as Frida wasn't last year, you are still a member. Being a member just means that you have formalized publicly your willingness to become a member of our congregation. But like every organization, we have to have formal rules when it comes to voting. And people who have become members of the church are then entitled to apply to become voting members. And everyone who is a member and wishes to continue as a voting member has to renew that every year. So if you're a member for years here, we still ask you to, every year, tell our membership secretary, who at the moment is, Rory is acting in that capacity, that you wish to renew your membership. There is either a small fee, €10, less than a coffee a month. It's not designed to keep people out. If you don't have the €10, if you put money on the plate during the year, we accept that. If you bring flowers in, we accept that. If you come and do readings, help at Sunday school, do welcome, or any sort of input from the church, we do accept that. But this just comes into importance when there's a vote in the congregation. So that's just to say, where we are this year. Now, on my list, I have 8. I don't think I have 8. I have 7 here. I think Mark Hutchison is not here. And that doesn't mean that Mark isn't a member. He is a member. And I know there are other people who, this year, were just late getting their applications in, and they will be members too. So today is just a formal celebration of welcoming people who express a wish to be part of our community, and then we take your photograph at the end of the service and you're in front of the magazine next month or the month after, you know. And it's a celebration for our community to see that we're vibrant and alive and people still want to come to join us. And this is our formal service of membership, signing the book. Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest of truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge and freedom, to serve humanity in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow in harmony with the divine, this do we covenant to each other and to God. Today we are welcoming 8 members to the fellowship of our church, and these are men and women who find themselves in agreement with its purposes and who are willing to support its activities. Now I invite the chair of our congregation, Denise, to say something.
Thanks, Bridget. Unitarianism is a movement fundamentally characterised by its steadfast devotion to 3 leading principles. First, complete mental freedom in religion rather than bondage to creeds and confessions. Second, the unrestricted use of reason in religion rather than reliance upon external authority or past tradition. Third, the generous tolerance of differing religious views and usages rather than insistence upon uniformity in doctrine, worship, or polity. Freedom, reason, and tolerance. It is these conditions above all others that this movement has from the beginning sought to promote. It's not difficult to join this church. As Bridget says, you simply have to make an application to the managing committee. And as she reminds us every year, the material rewards are few. In fact, your active membership will probably bring you, and most likely has already brought you, more requests for service and support than it will be the cause for rewards and statements of appreciation. But we do appreciate everything, even if we don't always say it at the right time. Above all else, we ask that you make to this community a very precious gift, the gift of your individual ideas and your sensitive ideals. I charge you, in your active membership, to share with us your creative thoughts, your vital experiences of life, your questions, your doubts, and your discoveries of all the ways in which life affects you and those people and principles that matter most to you.
So I have a question to the new members. Will you support the life and worship of this church, uphold its principles and purposes, and make every effort to live them out in your lives and in the life of the world around you?
Yes.
Will you present members of the Dublin Unitarian Church, welcome these new members into the life and worship of this church and support them as members of our community?
We will. And so with that declaration, I welcome you to the Unitarian Church St. Stephen's Green, to its idealism and its freedom, to the depth of its inheritance and the breadth of its fellowship, to the faith and hope and love which bring us together, to all of the service of every sort which this church can render to you and yours, and to the giving of yourselves in service to others in and through this church.
I now invite you to some moments of reflection and silence with these words from Theodore Parker. And David will play Da Pacem Domine, Give Peace in Our Time at the End. May I be open to the guidance that allows me to use this world well. In each moment and with each challenge, may I be open to wisdom, to goodness, and to respect. May each moment of drought be refreshed in an open, invigorated spring. May I see what is bad and what are expressions of neglect. May I strive to live in unity with all, loving them with all the challenges that I have around loving myself. May I love the unlovely. May I work for those whose burdens weigh heavily upon them. Burdens of ignorance, burdens of wickedness, burdens of lack of acceptance in each of our many contradictions. May I hope to be part of a time in which seeking this guidance allows for the forever flow of loving kindness between all humanity and around and through all that there is. Friends, I've titled this address, "What Do These Unitarians Believe?" And I invite you on a journey with me through a potential minefield, but a field nonetheless of ideas, of convictions, of doubts, and discoveries. Without a creed, without a set of fixed doctrines, we are, by any measure, a curious and unique church community. But I think we can begin here. This Unitarian community believes that when we gather, we are invited to share our wisdom and our questions about life's ultimate mysteries, and that in doing so, we grow wiser together. We are interested in what each other believes. I often introduce myself as the minister's apprentice, when I'm with Bridget meeting new people. And when it comes to meeting a family preparing for the funeral of someone deeply loved, Bridget suggested to me that we ask the question, what did they believe? And did they ever speak about what they believed, about that ultimate question, what happens to us after we die? And we include that as we prepare for this ultimate rite of passage. This is the second address in a two-part reflection on our shared convictions. 2 weeks ago in Many Gods, Many Creeds, I suggested that Christian orthodoxy tends to limit divine inspiration to one age, one book, one church, one creed. A Unitarian community, by contrast, holds an imperfect but powerful conviction that there is no one book, one institution, no priest superior to your own conscience and intellect, your sacred capacity to think for yourselves. The questions that confront us every day cannot be confined to one set of answers. And so today's address borrows its title from Savile Hicks' 1951 pamphlet and sermon, What Do These Unitarians Believe? And he begins by saying that people often define us by what we don't believe. But, he suggests, our affirmations greatly outweigh our denials. And he wrote, the heresy of one generation becomes the orthodoxy of the next. He asked, can anyone tell me of a single truth in science, religion, or society now widely accepted that once wasn't a minority opinion? Perhaps a one-man or one-woman vision battling against the regimented forces of accepted belief. Think of all that has been prohibited and condemned in Irish life over the last 50 years, and think of what has changed. Hicks makes an important point. Unitarianism is, first and foremost, a way of thought, a method of approach to the deep problems of religion and life. Declaring something as the truth with a capital T is not our way, because truth itself is unfinished. It's evolving, deepening, subject to revision as our understanding grows. In fact, many here would wonder why and how we could even begin to come to the truth of anything. But science teaches us that some things are indeed true. And that's if we trust it, of course. Once we believed the sun revolved around the earth, and Galileo suffered greatly for suggesting otherwise, yet truth moved forward, as it always does, when curiosity and courage meet. And this way of thought means progress. It means freedom. It means rejecting doctrines that insult the soul. And if we were to ever fix our beliefs in stone, those who come after us would soon be in conflict with us because their world, their understanding will have evolved. Now, Savile wondered what Unitarians in the 21st century might believe. Well, here we are, and yes, we have evolved. We no longer gather with just Bible and hymn book as the only sources of wisdom. We look to poetry, to science, philosophy, art, and those who change the world for the better. We are curious as to what other religions and faiths might teach us. And of course, lived experience is a significant teacher and guide as well. So what do Unitarians have faith in? Perhaps above all in freedom. Faith, when applied to religion, has too often meant throttling reason and calling it holy, mysterious, or beyond our understanding. But we seek a faith that frees religion, not strangles it. Some among us affirm the existence of God, the source of life. Some do not. We do not impose theological terror, nor do we fear it. We use our minds we've been given freely and fearlessly, and we aspire, however imperfectly, to tolerance. And tolerance, as I said in my previous address, is not merely putting up with something or something that is different. It is learning to live with the reality of disagreement and doing so with grace. Each generation faces its own shifting sands, and new orthodoxies arise and fall. And Yeats saw this when he wrote, "Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart, the center cannot hold. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. And cultural wars still rage. Certainty is sought. Dogma arises again to promise order. But these attempts have never brought peace. They have too often led to cruelty, to division, and to war. Our ancestors who broke from authority, who refused to declare any one final truth, suffered for their liberal spirit. And we now honor them as prophets of freedom, of saints of dissent. And perhaps I dare say that Jesus himself was the first of those prophets." Colm Keane wrote recently in the Irish Times that words are among the consolations available to us. They express something essential about human existence. Indeed, they do. And Unitarianism is a community of words sometimes, of reasoned words, of poetic words, of questioning words, not dogmas recited by rote. We are a non-subscribing church. That means we sign no creed. And we split from Protestantism when others demanded a confession of faith. You've heard the phrase, a come to Jesus moment. But I wonder, have you ever had a come to Unitarian moment? For me, it wasn't a conversion or a rejection. It was a realization that I am free to think and to choose what I believe and what I cannot. I was invited, silently but powerfully, to reject what offends my soul and to embrace what nourishes my soul. Our affirmations, I've learnt, are far greater than our denials. Unitarianism is a method of approach, not a catalogue of conclusions. Savile wrote, "We consider the capacity of thinking and reasoning as God's greatest gift to humanity, bestowed that we may use it freely and fearlessly, especially in matters of religion." Whether or not you believe that that freedom comes from God is really beside the point. The progress of human life in science, in medicine, and in compassion depends on people who take that freedom seriously. We will not be theologically terrorized. No clerical pronouncement can override human conscience. Scripture, too, we see as human record, 4,000 years of humanity searching for meaning, and it contains beauty and brutality, contradictions but wise parables alike. And as Hicks noted, we gain nothing by refusing to admit this. The Bible tells the story of humanity's evolving moral and spiritual life. It is not the final word, the only container of truth. And we Unitarians hold a conviction that God did not require Jesus to die to atone for sin. That teaching, radical in its time, still startles some today. For Jesus himself never spoke of original sin, nor claimed that his mission was to undo it. When asked how to inherit eternal life, he simply said, "Ease the plight of the poor." If the Bible is the word of God, why does God not speak plainly? Perhaps because it is, as we see it, the word of humans seeking God, and that search by nature is ambiguous, it's unfolding, but it is profound. Can we define God? Well, no more than we can define ourselves. We do live amid mystery. Yet in our deepest moments, we turn toward something greater. Call it God, call it conscience, call it the stars, call it love. And Hicks wrote, "Even as the earth revolves around the sun, our lives revolve around God, held fast by a spiritual gravity that will not let us go." And I might be bold enough to replace the word God there with each other. We are dissenters, we are non-subscribers, but we are also affirmers. Affirmers of the right of every person to believe according to their conscience. Those early Unitarians were exiled for their refusal to conform. The Act of Uniformity in 1662 expelled them from their pulpits, and congregations followed them into what is best described as the open air. James Martineau, who served here in Dublin in the early part of the 19th century, and he went on to influence the development of the Unitarian movement, wrote, "The gates were closed behind us, and we went into the open place, where cathedral bells and doctrines are heard no more, and newer voices of the Spirit floated to us on the silence, and we grew into larger apprehension." And that, to me, is part of our inheritance, spiritual freedom, wide open as the sky. We do not seek to have converts or to fill our pews with for their own sake. We simply wish to pursue enlightenment, to ponder life's ultimate questions, and keep our doors open to all who wish the same. The Christian teaching that God can only be known through Jesus limits God, confines the infinite to one person, one moment, one story. Martineau again tells us, "The incarnation is true, not of Christ exclusively, but of humanity universally, and God everlastingly." Established dogma in its rigidity can find itself at odds with personal experience. Freedom and conscience will always outgrow the walls built to contain them. What does this mean in practice? It means that we live our beliefs rather than argue them. We act on our conviction that every human being has dignity, that the world belongs to all, and that cruelty and compassion dwell side by side in us, and that freedom, deep inner freedom, is both our calling and our responsibility. John O'Donohue wrote, "You were created to be free. Within you there is deep freedom. It will not intrude. It will not hammer at the door of your life. You have to claim it, your own freedom, before it becomes yours. To be free is nothing. To become free is everything." So in conclusion, we believe what we can and what we must. I don't rest with delight at the freedom I enjoy. There is a clear Unitarian tradition for social action. Freedoms, both religious and social, are always at risk. I believe I am not called to step away from the great problems of our society. I wish I could step up to the great questions, particularly in the presence of hatred, far right or otherwise. We are free to form convictions about such issues as voluntary dying, LGBTQ plus issues, misogyny, equality, war and peace, and that most existential threat to creation, climate change. Some believe that this Unitarian institution should take a stand on some issues. Others do not. But what is within our tradition is that we are free to take a stand on those issues that we care deeply about. As our children's story tries to assert, we are not interested in being all the same. And that, my friends, is what this Unitarian holds. Perhaps you share some of my convictions, perhaps not. Amen. Let us sing now hymn number 124, Be That Guide, and after we will have the collection. Our notices, first Cormac, sorry we forgot to include you, but we will have you sign the book after. So thank you to everyone who contributed to our membership service this morning. Thank you to our guest organist, David Bedloe. Thank you, David. Please join us downstairs for tea and coffee after the service. Pam leads our weekly service of meditation and reflection every Wednesday from 1:05 p.m. to 1:35 p.m. You can also watch the sessions on our webcam. The book club is reading The Library of Heartbeats by Laura Messina this month, and they will gather in the last Wednesday of the month in the vestry. The Seeking Paradise Reading Group continues this Thursday at 7. We will consider the final chapter, and we will come together in the new year with some new reading material, and perhaps new people would like to join us. More details on that later. If you wish to receive a weekly email about news and events happening in our community, please give us your contact details. The Synod of Munster has called an extraordinary general meeting of the Congregation of the Unitarian Church, Princes Street, Cork, to be held in the vestry of St. Stephen's Green Unitarian Church at 11 a.m. on Saturday, the 6th of December, for the following purposes. The appointment of the following individuals as trustees of the Cork Unitarian Church building in Princes Street, Cork: Rory Delaney, Pamela McCarthy, and Anthony Brady. The meeting will be asked to accept and note the resignation of Mr. Dennis Elmer as trustee. The trustee company of the non-subscribing Presbyterian Church will continue to act as trustees of the Cork Church building, and a short service will be held after the meeting. And finally, we are collecting children's pajamas, hats and scarves for the Capuchin Day Centre. There are about 600 children who are being looked after at the Capuchin Day Centre, and if you'd prefer, they'd be happy to receive a voucher from anything from €5 to €40 from Smith's Toy Stores. So if you'd bring those in, please, by the 7th of December, and perhaps mark the parcel with the age of the child who is to receive them. And if you are doing vouchers, perhaps put the value. What will happen is they will put together 40 euros for children. And just a reminder that after our closing words, we will welcome our newest members with a photograph for Uscult. So our final hymn is number 190, Light of Ages and of Nations. If here you have found freedom, take it with you into the world. If you have heard some wisdom and truth, go and share it with others. And if you have known love, give some back to a bruised and hurting world. Spirit of the wind, spirit of the sun, spirit of our most precious world, bless us all in our diversity. And as we extinguish this flame of love, freedom, and hope, we carry it in our hearts until we gather again. Let us go now in freedom, peace, and love. Amen.